Heidelberger Frühling Podcast. Heute mit
Gabriela Montero.
I may quote you, the piano and I was love at first sight. Now, love changes, it decreases, it increases, it changes the character. What can you say on this?
Love is complicated. Love has ups and downs. My love relationship with music has been an ongoing story, but also with a lot of questions and doubts. I think you can love music, you can be so musical in everything, in your neurology, in your spirit, in the way you feel and how you see life. But of course, the life of the musician is a very different thing. Sometimes they're not compatible. Your love for music and the lifestyle that comes with being a musician. It's two different things. I have found through my almost now 5 decades of life that music has been my companion and also my diary, my very personal confidant. But it's also been what has most challenged me, because I think in all of this relationship with music, there has been a growth that I have experienced very often in front of the public. So you have to know that you will fall and you will rise in a very public manner. And that's also difficult about being a musician. But the love for music is always there. But I'm also a very inquisitive person, so the questions are always there too.
You have to travel around the world. Do you have still a sufficient private life at home?
No, I don't really have a private life. This is a problem. If I was not Venezuelan, and if I was not doing what I'm trying to do for my country, and if Venezuela and the situation of my country and the people and the suffering of the people did not take up all of my free time, then maybe I would have a little bit of a private life. But, I was born in this time, and these are the circumstances, you do the best you can. But for now, my private life will have to wait.
Private life means also to be at home, and you live in with your family in Barcelona, and you see all the troubles the Barcelona people have and make.
I live half the time in Barcelona. The rest of the time, of course, I'm traveling. It's very sad what is happening. I am very concerned politically what is happening in Spain. I see an ongoing and growing tendency towards radicalism, politically and socially around the world. I don't have a public opinion as to what is happening in Catalonia, because I think it's a very private matter for the Catalans and the Spaniards. I prefer not to comment, but I'm just saddened when I see that in many cases, personal ambitions on whichever side override what is best for everyone, for society.
If you see everywhere where the right political forces grow and democracy is going down, is music a possibility to write people up in some way?
That's a question that is very much now on people's minds. You know, what does music achieve? Is music of a solution, let's say, to taking care of some of society's ills today? Music can be used to create empathy, but it can also be used to distract. It can also be used to represent the wrong things. So we know that music can serve both masters, both good and bad. I think music has an incredible value of sensitizing, of somehow bringing an emotional content, an emotional message to people. And I think that's very important, very valuable. I think music should be of the greatest importance in education, of course. I fully agree. But I think music, without a message and without standing up for the right thing, standing up for democracy, standing up for liberties, freedoms, I think music can also be a bit of an empty vessel. Music without ethics, music without a real purpose, can also serve to wash and launder situations and images. So music on its own is not going to save the world. music with a message, with the right message, is very powerful.
But if you play, for instance, Beethoven piano concertos or Mozart piano concertos or whatever, where is the message for the world in this pieces, old and often played?
Well, I think they speak about our humanity and our ongoing questions, and they also speak about our human condition and our frailties and our strengths and our desire to connect as well to each other. It's music that is timeless, that erases any kind of barriers, cultural or historic, and brings the humanity of Mozart or Beethoven to who we are today. It's also music that is complex. It's music that you don't listen to in 3 minutes. You know, it takes time. It takes giving in to the music to sit through a concerto. And this is an experience. It's a 30-minute experience. It's a 50-minute experience. And we need that. So I think the value, of course, is not only the great music, but also connecting to this humanity that links all of us, you know, through time and space.
Let us come to your composing. Mm. Are you still doing this? Expatria was your first piano concerto.
Yes.
Then came another one in 2016, I think.
My piano concerto.
Yes.
Yes.
And now?
Well, my Latin concerto was just released this year on the Orchid label. And it's coupled with the Ravel G major concerto. And it's really a recording about the influence of the Americas in Ravel and the influence, of course, me as a Latin American exporting our languages, you know, to the European and to the more academic, let's say, circles. It was not my last composition because after the Latin concerto, I wrote Babel, which is a 14-minute piece for string, chamber orchestra, and piano. And it's about my frustration as an artist in trying to speak in a world where everyone seems to speak a different language and nobody
Babylon
is listening.
Babylon.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's very much a reflection after so many years of trying to speak about this important issue that is Venezuela and having people not only talk over me and over the what I'm trying to tell them as a Venezuelan, but also no one really understanding because everyone seems to want to speak their own language. But I've also just premiered my own ensemble, the Gabriela Montero Ensemble, in Geneva with three wonderful musicians from the Sistema, three young boys, and one from Santo Domingo. And for that program, I wrote the entire second part. And it's based on Bach. It's not Bach, but it's my, let's say, recycling of the Baroque language with two percussions, clarinet and double bass. And that was very, very fun.
One of your brands is to improvise.
Yes.
When you come to Heidelberg, Heidelberger Frühling in 2020, there's no room for improvising. You play with a string quartet, a Polish string quartet.
Yes, Shostakovich, no?
Apollon Musaget. Mm-hmm. But you start with Rachmaninoff, Piano Sonata number 2. There are three versions.
Yes.
A long one, a shorter one by the composer, and a third one by Vladimir Horowitz.
Yes, yes.
Which version do you play?
I play the short one by Rachmaninoff. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's the one I learned.
He cleaned older version because people said it's too heavy to play. It's too difficult. Is it your opinion too?
I think difficulty is relative. You know, I think there is always a solution to any difficulty, except, like they say, taxes and death. But no, I just believe that, you know, you should also respect the composer's last wishes. And in this case, I think this is probably after some consideration, this is what he wanted. And I love the long version, but I do find that it wanders off a little bit. It's more of a fantasy, you know, on the sonata. And I love the version that I play. And the Apollon Musaget actually is a group that I play with often, as much as I can, and I love them. They're a fantastic group of young musicians, and we have a really great chemistry, so very happy to be back with them.
How did you come together?
We were put together at some festivals, I don't remember exactly when, just a few years ago. And since then, we've done a few concerts. We played in Warsaw and we played recently in Belgium. The thing with chamber music is that I would love to do more chamber music. But how do you find the time between the solo career, the composing, the activism, everything? And also, unfortunately, it seems though chamber concerts are becoming less and less popular, which I just don't understand.
You think so?
In a lot of countries, yes. Mm-hmm. There's difficulty in selling chamber music concerts. And I find it's just such an incredibly satisfying and collaborative and wonderful and rich, musically rich form of musical experience. And, well, I often wonder why this is happening.
But young musicians try to break that. They yes. look for new forms of concert with poetry slam, for instance.
Yeah, and I think that's great. And I think it's kind of going back to the original concert format where you had many different artists with many different voices in one program and the programs were structured differently. I think, you know, it's not about coming up with formulas or gimmicks or anything like that. It's about really connecting music to an experience that also the public will take different kinds of emotions and different kinds of memories from the concert. And I think these experiments are absolutely valid.
Now, improvising, there is a possibility, as I understand now, to do it in Heidelberg too.
Yeah.
You will find a place, I'm sure.
I'm sure. Yeah.
What was the funniest suggestion out of the public to improvise a melody or a thing or a feeling?
You mean in all of my life?
Yes.
Well, I have had a couple of occasions when someone brought their instrument to the hall and then they mm-hmm. took out their violin or I think it was a clarinet and started playing something from the public. A couple of times people have given me phone ringtones, but mostly it's local. You know, if I'm in Switzerland, it's a Swiss folk song. If I'm in Turkey, it's a Turkish folk song. So you never know what people will suggest. It's always different.
And my last question, you have two daughters. Do
yes.
they admire you or are you just the mother?
Well, it's funny you asked that because I am a very normal person. My friends know that. My family knows that. The only thing that's not normal is the way my brain works when I'm at the piano. Neurologically speaking, that's a very interesting subject, which is actually, there's been a study done by the Johns Hopkins Hospital about how my
brain.
Yes, how it works when I improvise versus when I play memorized work. And the findings of it are extremely interesting, and it's going to be published in a medical journal. It's as though I'm two people. I'm just Gabby, and then I'm this person on the piano. And my daughter Isabella, recently, she was at one of my concerts, and she said to my husband, to Sam, she said, you know, it's just so weird to see mommy on the stage because it's like it's not her. So I have this split. I mean, I'm always me, but the way my kids see me, I guess, is they see me in my pajamas practicing, you know, sometimes, and then they see this person on the stage, and I wonder always how they deal with that, because the relationship of children with parents who are performers can be complicated, and the relationship of them to music can also be complicated because of the fact that music takes away the mother from them, you know, because of the traveling. But I do think they understand why I've done what I've done. I think they really respect and honor what I've been trying to do for Venezuela. And slowly, you know, as young women, they will understand also the importance of having a purpose and doing the best thing you can do with that purpose and in the best way possible.
And the story in the Johns Hopkins, mm-hmm. Did they put you into the
yes.
MRT?
Yes.
And you can play in the machine?
Yes, because they made a piano, a 33-key piano, especially designed for musical experiments with no metal. And mm-hmm. and I was there for 2 hours. Improvising and also playing Bach. It's incredible, really. When this comes out, it's going to be fascinating.